On a brisk March 10th day, also known as Super Mario Day, two adult males in their 30s, two very nerdy adult males in their 30s, begin the introduction for this podcast. Roll initiative.
12.
Tom.
Yes, sir.
You have the urge to go first. Roll for a performance check.
Ooh, that's not a good sign for this podcast. It's one.
I was really hoping that this was going to be the case. So much so, I might have loaded the die. You have the honor of doing the cold open introduction with a performance check of one.
Yeah. So cold open. Yeah, I'm cool and stuff. You should probably just cue the music.
Cue the music. Hello, welcome to Don't Evolve Me, the place like Ash, Ketchum, and Pikachu, we don't evolve, we just level up, and today, we got our follow-up preview, we're talking D&D with Tom, nerdier than you are, Chatfield, also known as DMT. Welcome, Tom.
Welcome, thanks for having me again.
I want you to tell the audience that this dice was not loaded.
No, it wasn't loaded, I was like, But then I thought, wait, I rolled a 12 on the first one. There's no way.
Rolls a 1 on the performance. It's not like, hold up, this is the dice that you have to roll for this specific roll.
Mm-hmm.
Rolls a 1. I think our wasn't our like first D&D. Didn't we roll a 1 for initiative?
I think during the session 0, you rolled a lot of ones.
My first one was a crit failure.
Yeah, because you were trying to convince the guards to let you into the Viking party. And no, they decided to put the boots to you instead because you were just, beer and stuff.
My kids, beer. Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I will have to look this up because I think in our D&D or Dungeons and Dragons Among Thieves episode, I think we also rolled a 1 for initiative.
I think so.
So we have a long standing history of rolling ones.
Mm-hmm.
One, all right, 3 for 3 with ones being like the first initial. So welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
All right. Let's get into it, because we got a lot to get into.
Yes, sir.
All right. First up, what are you nerding out on?
I've been doing a lot of my own personal minis for my 40K army. I've been doing actually a lot of painting and modeling and stuff right now. I started, just picked up a couple of games with some new guys that wanted to get into 40K at the club. And I was like, I can't really just go and, you know, represent with these unpainted models, so
that's
kind of how I am. Like, if there's ever any tournaments or anything like that, it kind of forces me to like finally get up and paint the things that I've not been painting forever.
I feel that. And speaking of which, we have a tournament coming up.
Yeah,
and we have a bunch of unpainted minifigs or not our scheme or paint scheme.
Yeah, if we're serious about having somebody play this, we're gonna have to buckle down and start doing that a little bit more. I was actually just thinking about that today.
Nice.
Yeah, we got a lot to do.
Yeah, we really do. I gotta message Brandon and be like, yo, so you're playing. We gotta get this shit done.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you did just see our new space that we have to work with.
Yeah.
Too. Once we get a table and. Yeah, going to work won't be too hard.
No, there's a lot of space in the new studio.
Yeah. Just needs a bathroom, but that's a whole project in itself.
You got a yard out there. As long as you're a guy, you got a bathroom.
I will say, though, in the summer, you can't really see into the yard too much with the trees.
Well, that's good. I mean, you probably have to go inside to do number 2, but, you know, you don't want a bunch of poop in your yard.
Yeah. I mean, it mixes in with the mud right now.
Oh, there you go. No one would know.
All right, so painting minifigs for your Warhammer army.
Yes.
Anything else?
No, not too much. I've been watching and talking to a lot of people about Helldivers, too.
Okay.
And I really kind of want to get into that.
Yeah.
It seems super cool.
What is Helldivers 2? I hear a lot about it.
So it's like a squad shooter type of game. Did you ever play Planetfall or Planetfall 2?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so kind of how it is like the company that runs it as like has like an overarching DM where mm-hmm. they like control. There's a bunch of sectors and planets in the whole solar system.
Yeah,
and you as the players currently like have to go in two objectives, and then like the more people around the world do the objectives and complete things, complete missions, you gain control over planets and sectors.
Hmm.
So you as the human federation conglomeration are fighting against the bugs and like these AI robot bros. Currently those are the two enemies that they have.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's you're actually playing along with everybody else in the world to gain control of this galaxy. So it's like a ever-evolving, like galactic war.
All right. So everyone's on one side fighting the others, like AI.
Yep. Yeah, so it's the AI. They have like a Starship Troopers, Tyranids, Zerg faction, kind of just big giant bugs. Huh. And then like a big Terminators, almost robot automaton guys.
That actually does sound pretty interesting.
Yeah, they have a big map up, and it shows you like currently what is being held by who mm-hmm. and everything like that. And the game master has kind of liberty to be like, okay, this might be fun. Let's put a bunch of really hard bugs in this section. Like they're going to push really hard and see what the players do.
Hmm. That'd be a fun job to have.
Yeah, really would.
You're the game master of this game, and you'd basically decide to fuck with like the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you get to, as you play, you get to collect more weapons, collect more credits, upgrade your ships. You can put artillery on your ships, and so you can do like orbital bombardments, and then you basically just pick what planet you're going to, drop down in there, mm-hmm. start wreaking havoc. Like, a lot of the missions are like you have to like get the nuclear launch codes and then detonate a nuke in a certain area type of thing like that. And so, and then just, it gives you fractional control over a planet.
I like it.
Yeah. I think it'd be fun to have a squad of people. Like, if we all had it, we could all play together and, focus on missions, one planet really heavily. But yeah, it looks super interesting. It's only a month out. And for being a month release, it's a really polished game so far from everything that I've heard about it.
Nice.
Bunch of my kids are all playing it, so that's kind of where I started getting into it a little bit. Yeah. So
I see a lot of TikToks of like gamers nowadays, like what they're into.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Baldur's Gate, and it was this game. There was like Power World, now it's Helldivers 2, and I'm like, I don't even know what any of this is. I'm like so out of the loop, which is like my job to be in the loop, but like.
But yeah, it's very, it gives me very like 40K vibes.
Yeah, it sounds like 40K.
Yeah, it's a pretty grimdark future. And I was like, hey, it's like essentially just a bunch of 40K races. But yeah, as they're releasing it, they're going to create new AI factions, which will be kind of interesting to see what they add.
My screen is yelling at me. Told you, gotta put the thing right there.
We gotta stop talking so much.
I mean, we could just have our own wing it episode.
Yeah.
Just random things. All right. So I'll go real quick and then we'll get into the news. One Piece as always, but not as much this week. The biggest thing I've been really into is Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate 3, diving into Act 2, trying to get past this boss, not leveled up high enough. And me playing Baldur's Gate kind of led to this idea of like character creations for D&D. And it's kind of fun because you get to try them out a little bit on Baldur's Gate. But yeah, as I was telling you, Rollo Edwards III doesn't quite get to play a whole lot of... Like, he doesn't get to be his fun self on Baldur's Gate. It's very...
Yeah, that's the only problem with D&D video games is there's only so many dialogue options. And it just doesn't fully capture... you know, the just multitude of like shit show that you can do in an actual D&D game. So, mm-hmm. But Baldur's Gate is a good representation.
It is. I think it's a great representation because like the second time I played it through with one of these characters that I created, like the order that things happen and like where characters are is so different that I'm like, wait a second, I don't remember this happening at all in this game. So it was really nice that like the random encounter is really like random. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like a whole different game almost because how everything's being introduced. Of course, you have the big plot points that you can't quite change in order, you know, you have to have the story.
All right.
But I will say it is nice because like everyone's playthrough is going to be different, much like D&D. Can't really, I feel like you can't really prepare if you're a DM, you can't really prepare what's going to happen because like you never know what the players are going to actually do.
Correct.
Other than that, Avatar Book 2. Been watching that with my son. Just finally finished Book 2 for next week. We're going to do a review for that.
I actually have not watched the new Avatar yet. I've heard it's good.
It is. I gave it a 3-.
Well, that's not terrible.
It is visually really good looking. The sound is great. Visually looks stunning at times. At times it doesn't. There's like the water scene sometimes just looks like they're just splashing water on the actors. like the rock or earth bending, fire bending, air bending, that looks look great, but the water bending is like so here and there.
Mm. Well, I mean, there's not a lot of other live action comparisons that we can make to, you know, there's only the movie and that thing is so trash that anything that comes out after that is just solid gold.
Yes. The Netflix adaptation compared to M. Night Shyamalan's movie is like 1,000 times better, and that might be too low. Because mm-hmm. that movie's trash. That's like yeah. the only movie that I'm like, yeah, that's a 1-. I never finished it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too angry to finish it. Okay, well, speaking of that, we'll get into the news now.
It's time for a news quickie.
All right, with Avatar coming out, seasons 2 and 3 have been renewed by Netflix officially. So we are getting book 2 and book 3, and that was a question that Brandon asked was, after book 1, can book 2 and book 3 be redeemed, or is this the best we're going to get? And I... All right, we're back. Your critical failure has rolled into this podcast.
It has. We had all sorts of technical difficulties.
Yeah, my program just stopped. We reset the computer, and it still did the same thing, kicked us out. Yeah, I still don't know what happened. We're just going to Frankenstein it and go forward. All right, so we just talked about Avatar being renewed. Let's talk about Mario news.
Okay.
It's Super Mario Day. Of course, I'm wearing a Luigi hat. My wife yelled at me before I even got up the stairs.
Because you weren't wearing a Mario hat.
I didn't know where it was, and I'm wearing green.
Yeah.
Kind of just wanted to go with it. Didn't want to change.
I kind of forgot that it was Mario Day, and I looked at you. I'm like, what's wrong with you, Jake? You look like an adult man-child today. More than normal.
I was going to say, don't I normally?
Yeah, but, you know, more so than normal.
I guess. I think it's the hat.
Yeah, and it's like the little kid costume hat.
I mean, literally, it was bought as a little kid, or... adult hat.
Got it. So it was like one of those like Halloween Express specials that come in the plastic bag. And
it was $5 for 2 of them. Yeah, so
there you go.
All right, Mario news. Mario movie. A new Mario movie is coming out 2026.
Yeah.
There was Luigi's Mansion 2 is being remade. Paper Mario. The Thousand Year Door 1. Mm. I don't know the proper title. I'm sorry. Is also getting released.
Yeah.
And maybe the biggest news? Lego Mario.
Oh.
Lego Mario Kart.
Lego Mario Kart.
Yeah, it's coming next year.
I've still only seen like half of the Mario movie, and the best part is the Mario Kart scene. It's so cool.
It was very cool. Rainbow Road. Yeah, it was a decent movie. It was great for the nostalgia for the first time. After the second time, it's like, okay, this movie's pretty bare bones. but the animation's great.
I might have a hot take on this, but like I'm not a huge Mario fan.
You're not a huge Mario fan?
Like, that was the first game I played. I played, you know, like at my cousin's house at the NES, and I played Super Mario Bros. 1. But, like, as far as actual Mario games that I've played through and beaten, the only one I've ever beaten was Mario 64.
You know what? If there's one to beat, it's that one.
It's a solid game. It was definitely fun, but, like, yeah, maybe a lot of Mario Kart, too. But, I mean, you can kind of consider those separate.
I mean, Mario is very much for casual gamers. Like, it's what gets casual gamers into gaming.
Right.
And you are, Tom, nerdier than you are Chatfield.
Yeah.
So you not being part of, like, a big fan of Mario makes sense.
Yeah.
You are way past that.
I'm too cool for that. I'm like nerd hipster around here.
Mario's so overrated.
It is a bit.
Why do you think I'm wearing the Luigi hat?
Yeah. I mean, his poor brother that never gets any of the credit.
He got 1 year.
Yeah.
The year of Luigi. Yeah. That's it.
But he's always in there. He's like, you know, hanging out with his brother. He's like, I'm just smashing as many Goombas as you are.
Yeah.
But do I get to make out with Princess Peach at the end of it? No.
No.
I get nothing. Like, he just gets...
He's just there. He's just having a good time.
Yeah.
So, all right. More news. So... Zack Snyder made some comments on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Okay.
And I needed to talk about it. And this might be a whole new episode. But this is cool. Batman Can't Kill is canon. And I'm like, okay. The first thing I want to do is when you say that is, I want to see what happens. And they go, well, don't put him in that situation where he has to kill someone. And he continues this quote, you're protecting your God in a weird way, right? You're making your God irrelevant if he can't be in that situation. He has to now deal with that. And if he does do what he does, or if he does do what he does, that mean, it's really weird. What does it tell you? Does he stand up to it? Does he survive that as a God? As your God, can Batman survive that? And it goes on for a little bit. And this comment pretty much tells me, he does not fucking understand Batman or Superman.
Are we talking... Was this... Zack this Snyder. Snyder was saying this?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's talking about how... If Batman can't kill, he's irrelevant. Hmm. And I disagree to the point. Because, like, Batman no kill is, like, core to the character.
Mm-hmm. But isn't Superman not killing anybody also core to the character?
Yes.
And then he snapped Zod's neck?
Zack Snyder did that, yep.
Man, he still came back from it. No one was like, oh, he's the worst because, you know, Zod was about to, like, you know, laser eye some kid's head off. So, I mean.
Yeah, I understand his point. To, like, hey, if he's in a situation, would Batman or Superman kill? And I think, yeah. I think if push comes to shove, you can only have two options. They're going to pick the one that saves the most people, right?
Right.
However, they are superheroes. They usually find a third option. Spider-Man in the first movie, he saves both. Mm-hmm. Superman in every comic would find a different way. In that scenario, you can just fly upwards.
And, you know, looking at this at a realistic standpoint, you know... So, like, Batman blows up a car, you know, mm-hmm. to stop the people that are chasing him. Do you really think those people aren't probably dead inside of that car?
They're probably dead, yeah.
You know, and the Man of Steel, or what was it, Batman versus Superman, he saves Lois from that terrorist, and he, like, blows him through a concrete wall, and he goes flying, like, 85 feet.
Yeah.
That, he's fine.
Realistic. I mean, like, if you watch any Marvel movie, and you, like, look, like, pay attention to the casualties the heroes are doing, they do a lot of fucking damage.
Right.
They kill a lot of people. It's, I think it's just, like, the, like, straight up, like, Batman just straight, doesn't straight up kill people. He indirectly kills people.
That's so much better.
But, I mean, like, you know, if you're driving a car and you run someone over by accident, you're not directly killing them, you're indirectly killing them.
Sure.
If you go up to somebody and you stab them 27 times in the chest, yeah, you're directly killing them. Mm. Like, Batman isn't one that, like, directly kill people. He indirectly kills bad guys.
Have you watched any of the College Humor's Bad Man?
I think so.
Oh my god, there's one where it talks about this exact same thing, and that's all I'm thinking of right now. He's like, "Oh, don't worry about him. He's just sleeping." And then he like throws a batarang into the dude's head, and then pulls a machine gun out and shoots him. He's like, "Look at that. He's a tired little guy." Batman, you literally just murdered that man. No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I understand where Zack Snyder is coming from, but it's also like this is like the core of the value. Like,
yeah.
If you're gonna have him kill somebody, you have to do it in like in a meaningful way,
right?
And like there has to be dire consequences for that character moving forward. And it really wasn't for Man of Steel when he did it, and it wasn't really for Batman. But I digress. I just wanted to mention it. All right, two more. Dungeons and Dragons Edition 5.2 is coming out this year. It's like the big one I wanted to talk about. And then Fallout. This is the biggest news of the week.
Woo!
Fallout's coming out April 11th. They dropped the trailer. I forced Tom to watch it. Literally strapped him down in the chair and put a phone right in front of him. Told him he had to watch it.
Yeah, I was trying my very hardest to just go into it fresh, but then Jake's like, "Yeah, we kind of have to talk about it." So I was like, "Fine, I guess so." But I was really impressed by the trailer. It was very cool.
Well, this is where I want to lead into, because all episodes are coming out April 11th, and I want to talk about the Fallout preview. Damn it, I did not write down the three characters, their actual names.
Vault Lady. Ghoul guy and
Vault Dweller, the Ghoul Gunslinger.
Yep.
And then
was it the Brotherhood of Steel guy. Initiate or Paladin or whatever? I don't know his rank. I guess that they didn't really say.
I don't know either.
He reminds me of what's his name's character from this new Star Wars trilogy.
Finn.
He's very Finny to me, and just in that little bit that you see.
Yeah, well. I was thinking Finn vibes too.
Yeah.
I didn't like necessarily think Finn, but I was feeling the same vibes because Brotherhood of Steel kind of, I wouldn't say they're Empire, but I would say they have like the Empire aesthetic.
Yeah, they're a structured military.
Yeah.
More so than anything else.
Power
in the wasteland. Power Armor, man. Don't get me started on that. That was awesome in the trailer. Like, they made Power Armor feel like Power Armor should be.
Yeah.
Because I always felt like in the games, you're rocking around Power Armor and you're still getting, like, hit by all the small arms and you're taking damage. And, like, you actually have to still heal and everything. But in the trailer, there was a part where there's this raider guy, some wastelander, and he's standing on top of a table as the Power Armor's, like, marching towards him. And he's just, like, literally point blank just unloading this machine gun into it. And the guy, the Brotherhood of Steel Paladin, is just, like, stomping towards him, not even phased. I'm like, that's exactly how Power Armor should be.
Yeah, it should. Like, you should feel invincible nearly.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Fallout 4 does a decent job of doing it.
Yeah, they do better in that one. I still feel it's a bit more... It's still a bit not as realistic as I think it should be, but...
Yeah, or, we're like, also, the energy part is like almost too realistic. Like, oh hey, I walked across the map. Oh, battery dead.
Yep, I need 10,000 fusion cores to make it anywhere.
And they're hard to find.
They are.
So, after watching it, I got chills because I feel like this is like the greatest of trailers you could probably get for this for a show like this, and I'm excited because one. I feel like now we've gotten to a point where we've had so many different remakes. Like, 10 years ago, any type of Fallout news for a Fallout TV show, we'd be excited, right?
Mm.
Like, yeah, it's coming out. Because, like, these things didn't happen that often. 20 years ago, would be ecstatic. However, it seems like we're getting more and more adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of so-and-so adaptations.
Yep.
Especially when it comes to in regards of video games. We did a whole episode on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, me personally, I don't know if you feel this as well. Going into it, I was like, Fallout TV show. And I was like, okay. If they do it badly, it's going to just be like every other adaptation that sucks. But if they do this well, there is room for an amazing series here.
Mm-hmm.
Then I hear some great things. Amazon's doing it. Great. Boys, Invincible. Like, they make some pretty good TV shows. Recently, Jonathan Nolan, and Lisa Jones, I believe it's the two. Jonathan Nolan co-wrote The Dark Knight.
Yep.
As well as Dark Knight Returns.
Yep.
And has worked on Westworld, at least season one. I think he worked on all of Westworld.
Is that Christopher Nolan's brother or something?
Yes.
Okay.
And he's the showrunner, I think, with Lisa, I believe.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, so great hands. Like, and the way they're taking this is they're not remaking any game. They're not doing New Vegas. They're not doing 3, 4, it's one like or two.
It's in Hollywood, right?
It's Hollywood, Los Angeles.
Nice.
They're considering this, at least lore-wise, Fallout 5.
Okay.
And me personally, I'm like, I think this is how I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't really recreate other players. You can't really do the Lone Wanderer, the guns. Like, you have to make a new, different characters. But the world itself is so, like, it's whimsical, but serious and funny at the same time.
I thought it was hilarious in the trailer how, like, cheesy and bright they made all the Vault Dwellers characters. Like, they're in these ridiculously bright blue jumpsuits.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, smiley and, like, you know, straight out of the 50s post-apocalypse or pre-apocalypse. Yep. And, like, I was like, man, that's exactly what they would be like, too.
Well, the Vault Dweller even has an arc in this trailer, which is crazy. Because, like, the first, like, two-thirds, three-fourths of the trailer is her being, like, this happy-go-lucky attitude. And, like, at the end of it, she's all bloody and, like,
she almost gets her organs harvested by the robot. I forget what the kind of robot that is. Yeah, Mr. Gutsy.
It's like, no, be calm now. I'm just trying to harvest your organs.
Right.
Like, ooh, that's, like, I feel like you don't even almost don't need, like, you do need a serialized story.
Mm-hmm.
But an episodic, like, just adventures of Vault Dweller would be honestly interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like this Fallout could be very episodic in the way of, like, each episode is different, and then you have, like, the overarching bad guy or villain.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to be good. I think if they had given that to Netflix, Netflix would have butchered.
Yeah.
They would have absolutely murdered it, and it would have been terrible. Amazon's a good choice.
I think so.
Speaking of Amazon, did you also know that the project that Henry Cavill's leading, they're actually making a 40K series?
Yes.
Produced by Amazon.
Yeah.
So, also, whatever that comes out with that.
I heard about that. I thought of you immediately.
Yeah. He actually, I think, part of, well, I mean, one of the reasons why he quit Superman and The Witcher and everything is, like, because he finally got offered, you know, his, like, dream.
Yeah.
Like, because he's, I don't know if you know anything about him, he actually he's played 40K since he's been, like,
Henry Cavill's, like, the sexiest, like, male nerd.
Oh, yeah, time. No, for sure. He's played 40K since he's been, like, a kid.
Yeah.
Because he's from the UK, and in the UK, it's a lot, that's where they're from, and they're a lot more popular there. There's a pretty big following, but, like, in UK, it's, like, more mainstream. Mm. But, yeah, he plays Custodes. Yeah, there's lots of times, like, there's interviews, like, him talking about playing 40K and, like, Jimmy Kimmel and stuff like that. And everyone's like, okay, what's that, nerd? Get out of here. And he's just, you know.
Yeah. Or just, like, the video of him building a computer and got, like, massive ratings. Just him simply building a computer.
Right.
And then, you know, all the nerdy males are like, you can build a computer? That's dope. And all the women are like, oh, he's good with his hands.
Henry Cavill could take a poop on a video and people would watch it, I think.
Rightfully so. I mean,
he's an attractive man.
He's attractive, but he's also, like, I don't know.
Talented.
He is, like, a genuine, like,
My biggest thing about him is that he actually cares about source material.
Yeah.
And he cares about authenticity, and he does not buy into this, like, you know, like, we got to make everything woke and, you know, about politics and everything like that. He's like, no, write The Witcher how The Witcher was written. Exactly. There's nothing wrong with the source material. Don't make it something that it's not.
And they did. Oh, I was actually mad Avatar did that.
Did they?
There was a moment. Like, one, you don't need to make Avatar woke. It's already pretty fucking woke.
Yeah, because there's, like, a lot of strong female characters in there, and, like,
all, like, they're all major races or human races. It's all about racism in general. Like, it's about a fucking genocide and a year-long war.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need... And they also, like, the source material talks about, like, gender inequality, too, among, like, the different tribes and nations. So, but there was one scene, like, the last episode, where Katara was trying to convince Paku to let women fight in the war. And, like, he's like, we're all here to help you. And literally, like, while this battle is being taken place, there's, like, 20 or 30, like, water women tribe just staring at him. Just, like, ready to help you. And, like, the song plays. And I'm like, this is such bullshit writing. Like, mm-hmm. you're trying to make this, like, this big, like, woman, you know, unity. Like you don't just do the source material. It already does that.
Yeah, they already fight. Yeah. You know, right?
Well, so. They didn't fight in the show, but like Katara paved the way for waterbenders to be fighters. Mm-hmm. Like the whole narrative. But they did in the Netflix live action, they were just like, fuck that. We're just going to do the scene instead. Mm-hmm. So, but back to Fallout. I don't know. I have high hopes.
Oh yeah, it was I was not watching because I didn't want to be disappointed. And like I was just gonna go out and fresh, but mm-hmm. then I was like, okay. Now we want to.
It was worth it. It was good. It's worthy of talking about.
Yeah, and then like the CG looks great. The like you know practical effects and the sets that they make look pretty dang good.
Every set photo that I've watched, and I looked at a lot of them, looked great. Like the cars and the set photos, looks like cars you'd find in the video game. Like the rusted buckets that you'd find on the like, it looked exactly like the video game. Like this mm-hmm. authenticity, like this feels like Fallout. Like if I look at a burnt down car that's just rusted, it should look like the video game.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes the world a lot more believable. Mm-hmm. I also just liked how they opened it too, and like they put in the music. Like they're going with the 50s vibe. They're not just like it's another apocalypse. That's great. No, this is Apocalypse, but with a 50s retro-ish mm-hmm. vibe on top of it being this future. It's also whimsical. Like it seems like they really nailed the tone.
Yeah, I like how they started the trailer with the introduction of a Vault-Tec advertisement mm-hmm. for the vault. So I was like, that's a good intro into it.
That was Walter Goggins, right?
What's up?
Walter Goggins, the actor.
Oh, yeah.
And then he plays the ghoul.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure those are the same characters.
Could be, yeah.
So they're taking the Fallout 4 kind of storyline a little bit.
Oh, yeah, the vault salesman.
Yep.
That is, yeah, because you find him later and he becomes a companion, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, I'm like, you know what, I'm fine with the little copy-pasting here and there, because that's a kind of a cool idea. But he reminds me of, like, the Lone Wanderer, or, like, the gunslinger, just the... Like, he's the gunslinger ghoul. He mm-hmm. reminds me of, like, almost a player from a game.
Right.
Except a ghoul instead. All right, anything else you want to say about Fallout?
No, I'm excited.
Thoughts on location?
I'm fine with California. I mean, I guess technically they've done close by with it.
I wonder, like they've done LA before.
I wonder if they're going to have the NCR be a big part of it. Since they're in California.
You would have to.
Yeah, you'd almost have to.
Think they're going to do Legion?
Hopefully that'd be a good Legion. Good bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, NRC would be a good bad guy, too.
Yeah, they're not
Brotherhood
exactly.
Brotherhood of Steel. I mean, I feel like they all could take their turns.
Yep. Go back, like, 12 episodes, and we will have a lengthy conversation about this. I think we had a long conversation about how there's no real good guys in the Fallout universe.
Yeah. I mean, same with, like, Warhammer. I feel like a lot of these universes, there's not ever really a good guy.
Everyone's just various shades of gray.
Yeah. It's not Star Wars. Light side, dark side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good guys, bad guys. You know what? I'm going to say the Empire did nothing wrong. They're just trying to bring order to the galaxy with an iron fist.
Watch Andor, man.
They still did watch nothing wrong.
I would think that, and then I watch Andor, and I'm like, oh, man, it's all about oppression. And I actually just, like, actually when I was watching Andor, I'm like, man, this just feels like real life.
Yeah.
A little bit. All right, should we get into D&D?
Let's do it.
D&D. First question that I have.
Sure. No.
For nerds.
Yeah.
What's the correct, like, abbreviation? Is it D&D or is it D?
I always say D&D, like D&D, like the letter N.
Letter N? Yeah. Okay. Because I, like, often see it, like, officially it's D, like, ampersand sign.
Yes.
D. But then I see, like, people say D&D.
Yeah, like, shorthand, everyone you're ever talking about or when I text it or, like, you know, message or write anything about it, it's always D&D.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are the official... I had the question when I was doing their Scourge of Wendigo, and I'm like, do I do D&D or do I do D&D? I don't know. Like, this is new territory for me.
I mean, I think either are acceptable.
Yeah. I like that, though. I like that, like, both are acceptable. There was a TikTok that I was watching where they're like, what does D&D mean? And only the real guys know. So everybody was like, oh, yeah, Do Not Disturb. Yeah, Do Not Disturb. We're like, no, it's Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
It's what D&D means. All right, so we talked about the new player handbook.
We just said that they are making it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
So we're talking about the new edition coming out. 5.2 is not 6. What's your thoughts, concerns, feelings towards a brand new edition?
I say I don't think it's going to be a brand new edition from what it sounds like and what you were saying. It just sounds like it's going to be a 5.5 type of thing.
Yep.
You said they were going to add some new class or subclasses and get rid of some subclasses for the ones that have a lot of them. I don't think they're going to be necessarily doing anything that's like making a brand new edition as far as like gameplay goes. So I think all that's going to maintain, but it's just going to be a like a refresh from what you were explaining it as.
Everything I heard sounds like it's going to be that way. They haven't gave too many details because I looked hard into this. And I think, like, the biggest question is, can you still play... If you're new to D&D, do you wait a year? Or do you start playing now?
You start playing it now.
I think so.
It's basically just going to add new subclasses and things. Yeah. It's basically like a video game DLC where they release new characters.
I like that. I know Player's Handbook is coming out September 17th. Dungeons Master's Guide is coming out November 12th. And the Monster Manual is not coming out until a whole year in February mid-February 2020.
So that makes me think that they're going to be adding more pre-made monsters and baddies, which is cool. That's the one thing. Like, you still... I mean, they have a lot of monsters.
Yeah.
But there's still... Like, if you're looking for a specific something, you usually end up taking the base stats of something...
Mm-hmm.
Already made and then adding a little bit of twist to it.
Flair.
So like the Wendigo, for example, was actually just a brown bear. Ironically enough. Nice. One of the things that I remember reading someplace was that for a level one encounter, if you want to make a decently challenging boss, use the stats of a brown bear.
Yeah.
And give him the same attacks as it. And it actually, I think it turned out... I think that was a great tip because the fight seemed not easy.
No.
Like, people were getting beat up. And when you did get hit, you got hit.
We did lose Arn, I believe.
Yeah, I think someone went... Cleric. Someone was down.
We lost our cleric.
Yeah.
Down, not out.
So, but yeah. There's a lot of little tricks and things like that that you can, as a DM...
So, I'm trying to figure out where we want to go. Anything else on the like edition 5.0?
No. I mean, I would have to look more into it, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be like earth-shattering.
I've been having ideas for one. I want to play more. I'm itching. I'm doing this episode to like scratch that itch a little bit. I'm playing Baldur's Gate because I'm scratching the itch. Like, I'm in, man. You got me.
It's fun.
I will say between you and Ro got me in One Piece. You got me in the D&D. Maybe we'll get me in the Warhammer.
I got to get you in the 40K so we can start working on the army again.
Well, we'll get the army done. We have a whole army to finish for the tournament.
Yep.
But I've been I had a DM campaign that I wanted to do for myself.
Okay.
But I don't want to talk about it too much because I feel like you're like someone I would want as a player.
Sure.
So what are some tips and tricks as a DM, either new or old, What are some tips and tricks? You already said one, level one, cave bear.
Oh, bear. Sure. Like as far as world building or just...
Yeah, world building. Like, should you make your own? Should you use one of the pre-written ones?
I mean, if you are a first-time DM, the pre-made campaigns are nice because they clearly spell out what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And they give you, like, it's a lot less work into that.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, I think that would be your first step into DMing was to, like, run. They have a lot of, like, pre-made campaigns that are one-shots and stuff out there. Yeah. There's a lot of people that just make and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
You do need to have a core grasp of the concept of DMing first before you want to, like, jump in the deep end, so to say.
Yeah.
So, like, you got to learn how to swim before you jump in the deep end. Mm-hmm. I mean, it also depends on you, too. If you're a very creative type and you want to put that much work into it, you can make your own worlds. You're going to be increasing your workload by about tenfold, I think, if you decide to make your own world, own story, that sort of stuff like that, because you are literally coming up with everything from scratch.
I have already started doing that. I wrote like two or three pages.
I expected you to do that just from like knowing your background and like talking about your, you know, your stories and your writing you've done before. Mm-hmm. So I expected that from you. Just be aware that you're going to be in for about 10 times the amount of work if you ever want to run that compared to running a pre-written one shot.
I did a one shot, or I'm working on a one shot. I think I have a really cool idea. The idea of it is, starts out as a nautical adventure. Session zero is a nautical adventure, and it ends up being on an island.
Okay.
Very much like, you can't really go anywhere.
Is it
too crazy? It's kind of a contained.
Is it called Two Piece?
It is based off. It is like inspired by One Piece.
That is another thing too. Feel like I always take stuff. Like I steal stuff all the time.
From
I steal ideas. You know, basic stories. Don't go into something like you're writing a One Piece adventure. You know what I mean? So you can use elements of that, like, you know, like, cool, I like this pirate theme, I like this Buccaneers theme, whatever. Use that, but kind of make it your own.
It is very much my own. I would not say it's a One Piece adventure. Okay. Definitely not a One Piece adventure. It's very much it's inspired. A lot of things I feel like I'm doing right now is inspired by One Piece. The audio story that I wrote is very much inspired by One Piece. Everything is inspired by One Piece right now, just because I've been playing it so much.
Exactly.
Or watching it so much. I would say this is more of a... You end up on this weird island, and you're told a bunch of information about it, and then you're supposed to, like, explore the island, figuring out what's going on, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
Like the way I want to write it is open. Like, I keep in mind, I know who I want to be as players, and I know how much of a dick they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very much like preparing as if I'm playing with a bunch of prick players who are gonna test the creative bounds of the campaign.
Am I one of those prick players?
No, I feel like you're me. I was thinking Moser.
Oh, yeah. Because
he pretty much told me that he wants to do it and that he would be a dick, so I'm like, I would have to prep for him.
Got it.
You were here in this room when he told me that.
That's true, yeah. That was a while ago.
It was nearly a year.
Any other tips? If I do, like, take things from things, it's slight nods to it, and I almost, like, I put them in there to see if anybody's paying attention.
Did you do that with ours?
Yeah, a little
bit.
Did
we get it?
No.
Oh, man.
Probably not.
I don't think you should tell us. I think you should...
The Scourge of the Wendigo was, I would say, semi-loosely based on, one, the Epic of Beowulf.
Yep.
Because we're talking about, like, Beowulf and the Grendel, you know, comes and kills everybody in the Mead Hall.
Yeah.
And then also the movie The 13th Warrior, which is a film adaptation of a Michael Crichton book called The Eaters of the Dead.
Okay.
And it's very, very similar to that if you've ever seen that movie. It's got the only main actor that people would recognize is Antonio Banderas. Okay. And he is like an Arab, like, I don't know what you'd call it, like an ambassador. And he ends up at a Viking funeral. And he gets sucked into this great Beowulf-esque type adventure where he goes and rescues a kingdom from the Eaters of the Dead. I added in like the Wendigo because that was cool, like Native American folklore.
Yeah,
that I thought was really fun.
Wendigo is a dope concept.
Yeah,
that I've actually wrote an outline for a story I was going to do for a comic, and it's something that Sapphire has drawn many times.
Nice. Yeah, so like there's a lot of things, and then like, you know, I stole stuff from Skyrim and stuff like that, because you know what, I'm not gonna sit there and rack my brain for 12 hours trying to think of the name of this river that no one's gonna think of.
You're like Raven Rock and Soul Sign. I'm like, I feel like I know that place.
Yep.
I like Google it. I'm like, is this like from D&D or like Skyrim? Like, this motherfucker stole from Skyrim. All right, I'll roll with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, like the Sea of Ghosts, I was like, I'm not gonna come up with a name for an ocean because no one's gonna care.
Yeah,
like, just it sounds cool because I'm gonna say it once and it's not, so why put in the mental effort for something that doesn't matter? It's like when you asked what your horse's name was and what color were they, I was like, fuck, it's brown and white and his name's Geppetto. Fuck, fine, I know.
What's funny about that is like in the moment I was so just like locked in on being Turlo, and I'm like, what the fuck would Turlo care about? He would care about what horse is going to ride.
And that does make your character fun. It does make the RP elements fun. So I'm not like, I'm never like, no, I don't care, whatever. So I'm still going to come up with something. But like I even said on the podcast, I was like, anybody else want to know about the horses that I totally had written down each one of their names and colors and their main length? And this one has a limp leg because, you know, its horseshoe is a little off.
Yeah.
But
as I was editing and I was listening to that part, and I was like, man, I really did not, like, realize that he does not have any of the shit prepped. Because I went into, like, hardcore, like, TikToks of, like, advice of, like, DM and what to do. And, like, the advice that they give is very much don't over-prep. Mm-hmm. Like, you can come up with a lot on the fly, especially if it's really small. Because there's so much, if you prep everything, like, you're only going to use like 10% of it.
I came up with Agatha wanting to bang Turlo about 45 seconds before you guys walked into that cave.
Wait, which part?
Agatha, the hag raven that wanted to bang Turlo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came up with that like 45 seconds before you guys walked into the cave. Nice. I'm like, this would be hilarious. Whoever's the first into it is going to do a wisdom check to see if they can see past the illusion. And who do you know was the first man in there? It was Mr. Turlo Rolo Edwards III. And he failed that wisdom.
He did. It was random, too, because Donald's like, I'm going to put Turlo first. I'm like, bastard. But like, that would be what, you know, Nike would do.
Nike would do that.
I loved it. Like, just the way it worked out. Mm-hmm. Like, almost felt like it was planned that way, but it wasn't.
No. It just literally was going to be whoever was the first one in there.
Yeah. So speaking of our campaign, what was like the very much the highlight of that? Was it the Hag Raven scene?
I mean, that was funny, definitely. What did I enjoy the most? I enjoyed the culmination battle right at the end when we actually finally won. I liked the Mead Hall encounter a lot. I think that was hilarious with Turlo trying to hide. And he's like a lampshade's on his head.
Was it you or Donald the one who like made fun of like that? No, I think you're the one who was like, you tried to be a lamp.
Yep.
I'm like, I fucking love it. I just like rolled with it.
Mm-hmm.
So like now that just has to be like lore now. He tries to be a lamp.
Mm-hmm. He's like the worst rogue ever. Also the best, apparently. Like, you know, you're sneaky as hell when you're breaking into dead people's houses.
I am sneaky when I don't need to be.
Exactly.
But very much not sneaky when it comes into a battle.
Right.
But, you know, hiding around a corner and shooting the killing blow.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Great at it.
Hag Raven panties.
Magic. Sometimes magical Hag Raven panties.
That's right.
That was a funny story because, like, I was just like, what's mad? Like, I'm literally just thinking as Torlo at this moment. Like, magical, magical, magical panties. Magic user panties.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Hey, on an 18, 19, and 20, they were. And you got it.
So, was there anything in, like, the campaign that you were just like... And I don't want you to give me details because, again... with the DM stuff, they're like, don't reveal too much. Mm-hmm. Don't reveal, like, what you did do or didn't do. But loosely tell me, was there something that, like, you had planned or a scene planned that we just, like, completely missed? That you're just kind of like, yep, I'm going to save this for later.
No.
No?
No. I puppeteered you guys thoroughly.
Well done.
No, I mean, I got all of the main... I've got all the main points that I wanted to get in, kind of the main, like, story points and everything. I think it was, I mean, a slightly different order, maybe. That was about the only thing.
Yeah.
But that's the way that I wrote the campaign, is that you still will do these things. It's just you guys decide what order to do them in.
Gotcha. Nice.
So, you know, it's somewhat railroading, but the railroad has paths that all end up leading to the same spot. It's
telltale of you.
Yeah.
You know, like... No, I'm not railroading you. It's just like every choice ends up to the other thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really what it is. You just, like, you have the overall arc in your minds, and mm-hmm. you just, you know, you ad-lib where you need to ad-lib to continue the story along.
Yeah. I don't think any of us were really being dickish about it. We kind of, I think, followed the plot threads.
Yeah, I think so.
Took it seriously.
Yeah. I mean, there was other stuff that I thought you... I guess there was one thing that you guys didn't do. I did have a little scene that if you had gone after the son and questioned him more, he would have challenged you to a like honor duel.
Well, that'd be cool.
And he wouldn't have done it himself because he's a pussy. So he would have had Ivar One Eye be his champion. So that was the only thing that you guys didn't really do that I had ideas for that. I was like, that's a possibility, but you guys went more the route of, you know, checking the cleric out rather than that. And they both would have, again, both would have led to Agatha.
Yeah.
So regardless of what route you took, you still brings you to giving you... That's what I like to do, is just give you several options and think of the ways that you might feasibly get the information.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys start going one direction that I didn't really have planned, that's when you just ad lib and you're like, okay, then maybe then you'll have an encounter with a certain person at this place that you guys decided to go to rather than, you know, meeting him in his chambers or something like
that. It's like having plan B as an option mm-hmm. or plan C. Like, you know, like, hey, if they go in a completely opposite direction that I haven't planned for, what can I do to bring them back, or what's this alternative story here?
And there was, I mean, there's other things that I added in there where, you know, Agatha needed something of the eaters in order mm-hmm. to, like, identify and give you information about that. The only thing that you guys found was that claw after the Mead Hall fight. So if you guys had completely foregone and ignored the farmstead that was burning, you still would have had the claw.
Nice.
So you still would have had something that made sense.
Yeah.
The funny part is, too, I totally had it written in there, if you guys had actually investigated the claw, which I think somebody did, but they rolled like a 2 on investigation, they would have quickly realized that it was just like a glove. Like a bear, like literally a clawed glove that was like strapped to a human hand.
Okay. I like it.
So.
That makes sense. I want to talk about the ADHD role. Because, like, part of me is, like, I was debating. I'm like, do I want this to be an everyday all the time thing for the character?
Right.
Or just a sometimes thing? And then I, like, realized, I'm like, you know, an ADHD role for my D&D character would literally just be my real life.
Yeah.
And it is essentially my real life. And, like, the reason why I don't want to do it is, like, man, I want to escape from the fucking ADHD.
That's why I only did it twice.
I do want to push back a little bit on the ADHD thing, though.
Sure.
Because it feels like... Because he did it twice, and I rolled it once. And there was one where you're like, oh, you must steal this thing.
You said you had the urge. Yeah, I suppose.
The
urge.
The only thing I would change about it is ADHD is a multitude of things.
Sure.
But it isn't necessarily like an unbreakable urge to steal something. It's more of a motivation factor of like, one of the great examples I did is speaking to animals, right? You roll the, whatever the check would be for speaking to animals, it's a 20 or like a 19. Now do an ADHD check. You can speak to the animal, but if you roll a low ADHD check, you are not listening the entire time.
Or you're talking to the animal about something completely different.
Huh?
Or you're talking to the animal about something completely different.
Yeah, than... you're off topic.
Sure.
Or like the five questions. You end up like the three of a question. So like, what did you do when you were dead?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who was you? Like, what would you do differently? Like, fucking Turlo. Like, we got to figure out what the thing is. I'm like, oh, we only have one question left.
Yeah.
Like that type of scene. Or just the like when the traps when we're making the snares.
Mm-hmm.
Like I rolled the high, whatever the roll was,
mm-hmm.
made 14 of them. But low ADHD roll, like, yeah, you did great. You made the first four like super fast. But then you got bored and you started just humming and doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the stuff check, do an ADHD roll. You got bored, so you decided to pretend like you're a lamp and you goofed off and now they realize mm-hmm. you're there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just tried to wing it as much as I could.
Yeah. But I appreciate you throwing it in there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Tell me about your characters.
And then we'll do my some personal reading. Characters that I've played?
Yes.
I've played a lot of characters. Most of them have been very one-shotty type of ones. So there's okay. not... I wouldn't really count those. I mean, I've probably played 24 characters.
Do you have a long-standing...
Yeah, but I have three that I think I played the most.
Okay.
The fourth edition one is when I started playing, and that was with New Guy Tony.
Nice.
And that's when I first started getting into D&D with one of our friends. That was the one we were playing once a week. His name was Voris Wolfgar. He was a cleric of Kord. And Kord is basically D&D Thor.
Nice.
So he's like the god of battle and thunder and things like that.
Yeah.
He was loosely based off of Warrior Priest of Sigmar from Warhammer Fantasy. And there are just these bald-headed dudes that have big Warhammers and plate mail.
Yeah.
And they are holy men that fight in the front line.
Nice.
So I did kind of a less cleric-y role and more of a hybrid fighter that could heal.
Okay.
And do, like, you know, that in blessings and things like
yeah.
that. So we did him, like, 2.5 years, I think. I also played... Or he was a human cleric. My current one is a human fighter. His name is Dorian Blackmane of Skellig. Like, he is a monster hunter.
Okay.
So he was the one I loosely based off of...
Witcher, right?
Witcher.
Yeah.
So... I ended up level 3 when I got my subclass went Eldritch Knight, which is just a sort of like a fighter that also dabbles in spells. So like a witcher.
Yeah.
He was the one where I took all the spells that I took. I tried to make them fit with the Ards. Was it the Ards? Like, you know, you got like the little fire blasts yeah. and the shields.
Is it
and
Acne?
Maybe. Their Igni is the fire spell, or the fire ard.
Oh, okay, yeah. I forget what they're called.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
I think they're ards, if ards? I remember. ARDS or something like that. But anyways, yeah, so I took all the ones that were, like, Witcher-esque or whatever, yeah. and so he was just, like, a new monster hunter that just graduated, and he's just going around to make money.
Nice.
We ended up starting a monster hunter / mercenary company called Black Gore and Company. Because
mm-hmm.
Blackmane was my name, and then the other main character, one of the other main characters that my buddy Mike played was Gershwick Kilgore. So we were Black Gore and Company. Nice. So, yeah, we ended up with like a little like base that we got like gifted to us when we saved a city. And mm-hmm. so we like ended up putting a bunch of money in building a big hall and everything like that. And so like slowly we've, you know, encompassed and started making this like miniature army almost.
Is it like you spend sessions instead of like questing. You're like, you know what? We're just gonna build this base up.
That's more, and most of that stuff happens on like the sides.
Okay.
Like our DM was like, okay, so your hall, you got it, but it's been abandoned for 50 years. So like the roof is collapsing. And so he's like, it's going to cost you X amount of money to, you know, like hire stonemasons to fix the hall. So then like in between questing and stuff, we'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm going to give a 1,000 of my gold to put towards this. And then we're going to build, I don't know, I'm going to put 5,000 golds to building a watchtower.
Yeah.
And does it actually mean anything in the grand scheme of the game? Absolutely not, really. I mean, it really makes no bearing on it. Like, but it's just something fun that we get to do. You know, like we're actually making a mercenary company. So the only other one that I played, I think, somewhat long-term was a character named Shale, like Rock almost. He was a Warforged artificer.
Okay.
And Warforged are like steampunk robots almost, right? So they're like automaton kind of. But instead, usually Warforged are made out of like steel. I just said that he was going to be made out of rock instead. And so he was just basically a giant rock golem.
Nice.
He was afraid of birds and hated birds because when he was made, the person that had his control wand... was killed and he was left out in a courtyard for like 250 years, and so birds constantly shat on him and just pooped on him and like got up on him and like used him as a nest. And so he, after 250 years of birds pooping on him, he has a unnatural fear slash hatred of birds. Like he started a forest fire one time because he saw like a little sparrow up in a tree, and he's like and shot a fireball at it and it lit the forest on fire, and he just kind of shrugs his big rock shoulders and is like, I don't know,
like it.
So yeah, you know, he had a fear slash hatred of birds, and it was pretty fun.
I mean, every bird encounter, it's going to be a reaction.
And he referred to everybody else as meat bags because, you know, he was, they're fleshy and he's just made of rock. So, you know, once he got to know everybody like in the party, he would just, he called them by name, but like at first it was just, hey, meatbag.
Do you have voices for all of these characters, or did you, or were you just like Tom?
I mean, it depends. Sometimes the voices come and go. I did Henry Cavill's Witcher a lot for Dorian, just the fuck.
I love it.
Shit. You know, that sort of, you know, I just like threw those in there every once in a while. I wanted it to be different, but I wanted to, like, again, I wanted to nod towards, you know, the source material that I was taking from. So,
all right.
But, yeah.
All right. Should we get into grading my characters?
Let's do it.
All right. I haven't had a chance to mess around with all these. Obviously, not like Turlo. First one I'm going to have you rate is Turlo. And I want you to rate it in terms of, as a DM,
okay,
how much, and it's going to be the DM scale.
Okay,
you can be as mean or as gracious as you want.
Okay.
In terms of how interested are you in this character, or how much you're like, fuck this character, it's going to be hard to work
with. Pain
in
the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Some of them are going to be. So first one is Turlo.
Okay.
Turlo Rolo Edwards the Third. You gotta deal with this voice the entire time.
I'm fine with voices.
Scourge of Wendigo. Rogue variant human. Is very much ADHD. He just follows the dopamine, man.
Yep.
For session zero was all about the Viking titties.
Yep.
Session or actual one shot, it was mostly just beer.
Yep.
And obviously Viking titties in the moment.
Hey, Graven titties.
Hey, Graven. Hey, in his mind, it
they
was
were
like,
they were hot.
They were amazing.
Yeah, like I said, she was like a 9.5 when you saw her.
Yeah. I mean, there is a question. If, let's say you're a single man, right? And you knew that the person in front of you was a Hey, Graven, very 20 years old, just naturally isn't great. But could this allusion to making you see whatever, do you not jump in?
I jump in.
I mean,
Even if I knew, I'd be like, I don't know, I can tell.
Like, I think of, like, Young Justice. I don't know if you ever watched that. Miss Martian, she's a white Martian. This really grotesque, monstrous-looking being, but can shapeshift it like anything.
I'm thinking of that fat dude from The Boys.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that can, like, polymorph into whatever.
I don't know if I can go that far.
Meh.
But, like, I'm just thinking... Oh man, Homelander.
Yeah.
Murders this chick. It's just like, be her. Feed me milk.
Yep. Oh man, Homelander's a creep. But we digress. Turlo, yes. I actually would rate, as a DM, I would rate Turlo as like a 4-.
4-?
Yeah. He would be a bit difficult to work with, yep. I think. But I do think that even in our little one session, he had a bit of a character progression. I feel like Turlo could have a really good character progression. I think at heart, he's going to always maintain his ADHD, I just like to drink and party, you know, type of ways. But I feel like those are the unexpected heroes that I could write a lot of stuff for that would give him an opportunity to be more of a hero, and then it would be up to the player whether they decide to take those opportunities.
Yeah. I want to talk about Turlo a little bit in character progression, because I feel like out of all the characters, his arc was completed.
Yeah.
Like, almost, like, I almost feel guilty for how much his arc was completed, because I think towards the end, he definitely got the limelight.
Yeah.
But for his arc, like, session zero, right? He's just drunk off his ass at a tavern. Hears about a Viking funeral. He's like, I heard that grieving women.
Yeah.
Grieving Vikings? Yes. Like, I want some of that. So he's just going there. He gets his ass kicked. He finds himself in a quest. This dude could have ran this entire time, like, ran away from this entire time, but he continued with this quest. The dopamine is within the quest.
Yeah.
And throughout this quest, right, he does get his Viking titties, even though they weren't actual Viking titties.
Yep.
But it's my mead, it's it. And he...
gets lots of mead, too.
Gets a lot of mead the entire time.
He has mead the entire time.
And he makes the two killing blows in, like, a very Turlo-esque fashion.
Right.
And at the end, you're like, everyone gets 10,000 gold, which is what he works for oftentimes, since he's a mercenary. And a bunch of Viking titties for Turlo.
Right. You think of all those single villager ladies that lost their husbands. They're going to be so happy that you saved them all.
Yeah. So, like, Turlo moving forward, I'm thinking this character. I'm like, man, this guy went on his first, like, quest with a party. He is a hero. He is treated as a hero. He's getting reinforced. He's getting a bunch of fucking dopamine. What is he going to do for the next session?
Yeah.
He's going to be in. And that's where I'm going to leave Turlo. Like, he had this huge progression. I'm like, I'm excited to continue. Because I don't know what's going to happen next.
I think he very much likes the celebrity that he's going to receive or has received in the attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm just excited because I just never know what to expect.
Yeah. The reason, I was going to say, I rated him high just because even with his difficulties as a character, you know, just of the shenanigans that he would get into, he's got good room for growth.
Yeah,
which is cool. Which is what I usually look for.
As well as if, you know, your quest is interesting enough, he's in.
Yep, exactly.
Or if you just give him the fucking mead.
Yep.
Oh, Nike, don't give him mead. Like, fucking give him his mead.
Give him his mead.
Give him his mead. He will be fine. All right, next one. Finian Gimrak.
Okay.
He is a dwarf.
Okay.
A high dwarf is possible. High dwarf is when they're actually unnaturally tall. I'm thinking 7 foot.
Okay.
But still wide, like a dwarf.
Okay.
All depends on the DM at the time. He is this happy-go-lucky dwarf. He is a giant teddy bear. He follows the god of Tyr, but not specifically following the god of Tyr. I believe... there's Tyr paladins in Baldur's Gate.
Okay.
Not necessarily. I was trying to find the right god for him to follow, and I'm like, Tyr sounds like a god that he would follow. He worked in the Church of Tyr, and then set on his own to basically serve the world in justice. Like, he wants to bring justice to the world. But at the same time, he's also a servant of Liara. He also wants to bring joy to the world when he's not focused on the mission. He is a character who will indulge into fun things, but will never take over the mission itself. Always focused on the mission.
Okay.
Wants justice in the world, does what's right. Dwarf Paladin.
Dwarf Paladin, okay.
Happy-go-lucky.
Happy-go-lucky Dwarf Paladin. What's his oath?
Because
that's a big thing for a paladin.
Yeah.
Because generally, that's the problem with having a two-pronged paladin is because, like... But you said, like, he's always going to follow whatever his mission is, right?
Yes.
Before the joy. Okay. I get that.
His oath is to bring justice to the world.
Okay.
Justice who's... Bring justice, be good to the people, serve the people.
Okay.
His oath is to the people.
Okay. Personally, I find paladins boring.
Huh?
As a DM, I find paladins boring.
Okay.
Because there's this stereotype of kind of like the lawful dumb paladin is what they call him.
Yeah.
And it's just, no, that is my mission. I'm going to stand in front of these horde of 1,000 orcs because my oath says that I must do this. Mm-hmm. Where they're just going to die.
Yeah.
But I do like the more human aspects of him, mm-hmm. whereas like he's serving multiple gods, whereas he's also trying to bring joy into the world. So he has a lot of... I think he has a lot of potential for story building as far as having conflicts within mm-hmm. himself. Like, do I follow the straight and narrow and do I follow justice or, you know, do I, do something that serves more to the people that I care about and love?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of room for conflict with him, I feel like. I agree. He would have a good, progression for a story arc.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I always see is, like, he's out there for justice, but who's determining the justice?
He is.
He is. So is that going to be right, always?
So who knows?
He could potentially cause conflict amongst, you know, the party
mm-hmm.
or an NPC or something like that. Like, you know, if the king wanted somebody captured and he's like, I demand justice and they deserve to die for... their crimes, and you know, this could cause conflict amongst the party and NPCs and things like that. So I'd give him like a 3+.
Okay. He's the one I was probably the least excited for.
Yeah, he's again, that's more so my own personal bias against paladins because I think they're boring as shit.
My goal for him was, you know what, I want to make a character that one is more of a fighter rather than like a rogue,
mm-hmm.
who's also kind of like happy go lucky, very party friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this character is very party-friendly, but also the interesting thing I have is he doesn't actually follow Tyr the God. He doesn't follow the church. He doesn't follow any sort of like order or religion. Mm-hmm. He is, in a way, a mercenary, but a mercenary of like high morals.
Okay.
So that was my thought process. Because like, let's say the followers of Tyr, right, do something that he doesn't think is justice,
mm-hmm.
he would fight back.
Okay.
Not trying to like change the rating, but more just explain the character.
No, that's fine. And again, that's more my personal bias against paladins than anything.
Oh yeah. All right, next one. I'm not sold on the name. Eot Reed.
Okay.
Mostly because Elliot Reed from Scrubs.
Okay.
Half orc cleric, possibly multi-class as a barbarian.
Okay.
Was born in an orc village that was often cruel. She was able to escape from a young age and lived in a poor shack with her mother in the big city. She outright rejects orc culture for the cruelty that she saw. Her mission is to heal the world around her and gain knowledge to heal more. She hides her face because of how people treat her.
Okay.
Can speak quickly, especially if interested in the topic, but often speaks really slowly, very dumb sounding, very orcish. I would say is more neutral to good. If she is pushed in a fight, let's say like if some dude was like right up on her and knocked her damage, she would be triggered enough to be more of a hand-to-hand, like, brawler type of fighter, which is where I put Barbarian as a possible multi-class.
Subclass. Okay.
Subclass, yeah.
Yeah, again, that would add for some pretty interesting stuff, because you kind of got a two-pronged thing. You said she's hiding her identity most of the time?
Yep.
Okay, I like that. That would be, it would be a fun character too in a setting that was a little bit more like grimdarky, I think, where people don't treat non-humans as well as other ones. There'd be a lot of, I think there'd be a lot of opportunity for some pretty good interactions with that.
Be prepared for two prongs. You keep saying that, and I feel like two prong is like every character I wrote.
Right.
Has like a second part to it.
Sure. Well, I mean, then that does make it makes it harder, but it makes it more interesting as a DM. So, you know, you want to try to come up with things that fit both of those prongs.
Yeah.
I would say we'll give that one a four.
Four.
I like that.
And for the record, if I were to play any of these characters, they would all be male just to match the maleness.
Sure.
But in my mind, she'd be a female.
Okay.
But either war would work. They're more like genderless.
Sure.
If anything. So a four for Eot Reed. I would be excited to play her, though.
Yeah.
It's like one of those, like, you're just the speech pattern, trying to nail that down would be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you're trying to, like, you're trying to portray a character who's very intellectual but doesn't have, like, the best speech pattern to, like, do it. On top of the fact that, like, you have a very reserved character who is, like, potentially could rage out at any moment.
Yeah. One of my other side characters for our current campaign is a half-orc monk.
Ooh.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
He's also, like, he sounds dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But actually a little smarter than I do him in a hard like Cockney accent, like orc accent. It's good.
Can you show us for the
what should he say? Well, it's not exactly what I think, little green, but then again, you is smarter than I am.
I love it, man. I love your accents.
Yeah, he plays his buddy is a goblin.
Mm-hmm.
This is our, well, we have, so we have another like side story. So we have like lower level characters that we play along with, and we call it the Staghammer Stories because the hall that we, our mercenary hall is called Staghammer Hall.
Nice.
So, like we'll switch between DMs every once in a while. My buddy Mike runs these like one or two session shots.
Yeah.
And we use our side characters who are the people that we have recruited throughout with our main characters.
That's dope.
Yeah. So my the orc's name, what is his name? Oh, I can't know. Oh, yeah, his name is Urgar Teethbenda, like teeth. But that goes back to 40K. Their their currency, orc currency, is teeth. Because they continually grow teeth, so that's what they actually buy and sell things with, is their teeth.
Hmm.
Or when they knock people's teeth out, they take their teeth and like give them for, you know, a new gun or something like that.
I like it. It's grotesque, but I like it.
And I did Teeth Benda because it was supposed to be like Airbender because he was a monk.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Nice. All right. I have the next one. Buka Budman.
Buka.
This one, I would say, is very much, I would have to get the DM approval on.
Okay.
Mostly because, like, the nature of this character very much is opposite of, like, what you would need to be for an adventurer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll you'll see why. So, half-elf sorcerer is the son of a prominent hero sorcerer named Bud. We can change the name, but that was what I was going with. He hates his father for not being around and for being a human. He lives mostly with his elf village. He spends his life denying his calling. His father, made a prophecy that his son will be the reason many great evils in the future will be defeated because of his intervention. And this leads to the public expecting great things out of him. Okay. He's super talented. He has all the potential to be a great leader, to be a great sorcerer, to be a great hero, but wants none of it. He is very much denying his calling. Lives as a noble in Elvish tribe. And Buka, at least initially, will shy away from interactions and will deny the calling. Okay. Which is probably why I would need DM approval to, like, figure out, hey, like, you gotta come up with a... you gotta get him involved somehow. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's not that far off because he's not, like, an inherently evil character. I thought you were going, like, I'm just gonna make this, like, evil, dark, bad character that's, like, not a hero.
Two down.
Okay. No, that I just would have to come up... I would have to talk to you and you would have to come up with a good hook and reason why he would actually...
Yeah.
Join. Like, I'd be like, this is what's happening in the world. Tell me why he actually got off his royal elf ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the big bad came and destroyed his village.
Yep.
You know, slaughtered everybody. And he's like trailing, you know, he's following the army of the big bad and trying to get revenge. And then he meets up with other adventurers along the road. And they're like, hey, we were paid to, you know, go scout this. Like, and then he's like, okay, you know, now, like, he seems a very revenge-orientated character.
Yeah.
I feel like, because the way you describe him, yeah, he wouldn't get up and do, like, what he's supposed to do unless he had a real reason. And
the call of action would have to be, like, forced upon him.
Exactly.
Like, there was no, like, destroying his village would be a very call to action. I think it would just be... This character interests me in the simple, like, the idea of, like, everyone thinking you're a hero and you're just like, no. Like, I'm only doing this for this reason, but it's like, you know, just that inner conflict of, like, you're a hero, but you're, like, I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, like, over time, like, fine, fuck it, like, I am this guy.
Right. Yeah, the only other difficult thing that I would rate... Sometimes players get this idea. They got to remember that when they start off a campaign or something, they're level one. Unless you start a campaign where you are, you know, we started at level 10. Because sometimes people get this in their head that, all right, he's this ungodly powerful, amazing sorcerer, everything, but that just doesn't really fit in with the gameplay aspect of actually being a level one sorcerer where you just are going to get killed by a giant rat.
Yep.
So that might be kind of hard to work with for me, so I'd actually rate him a bit lower at probably like a 3+ as well too.
Okay. I will say, yeah, that's something I kept in mind too. It's like, all right, I would, like, starting out wise, like story wise, you would have to have... You have to talk about, like, why they're there or have that potential of growth.
So, like, Dorian Blackmane, my main that I'm running right now, when I started him, he is a novice. Like, he just basically, like, graduated from, like, the basic training, and he has gone out into the world. He's broke. He's young, and so he's actually spent more time partying and, you know, like, womanizing than he has actually hunting monsters.
Nice. I like it.
So, like, my DM would always make me, like, roll checks for history to see if I actually remember or know anything about a certain monster. Because he's a novice. Like, he's done... Everything he's done has been in, you know, the academy.
Yeah.
You know, in his monster hunting academy, in his witcher school, whatever you want to call it. So, like, he's had very little real world contact or, you know, experience with those sort of things.
I think I, for most of these characters, except for, like, the next one I'll bring up, I think level one works. Because this is a sorcerer. Like, this guy doesn't want to be a sorcerer.
Right. But, like, it sounds to me like he's amazing. Like, genetically, he's amazing. Like, he comes from heroes, basically. He
has great potential.
Exactly.
So, In order to be a sorcerer, you have to get your power from, like, a dragon.
Yeah, some sort of deity.
What dragon? I don't even know. I think I picked blue dragon.
Okay.
I don't know. I was trying to look it up.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a dragon. It's just some sort of powerful entity.
Gotcha.
So, a sorcerer is ones that make a pact with, like, it can be demons, it can be gods, it can be...
Is that warlock or no?
Oh, am I thinking warlock? Oh, yeah, warlock. Sorcerers are the ones that are naturally born.
Yeah.
With powers.
Well, I was just doing on the D&D Beyond.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, which dragon? I'm like, I have no idea. What do the dragons even mean?
I didn't even realize they were supposed to have dragons associated
blue.
With them.
I like blue. I don't know. So, 3+. No, that's not bad. All right, the next one, this is the last one, or I have two more. This is the one where level one, I don't know if it makes sense. Zaxxas, the Village Slayer.
The Village Slayer, okay.
He's a tiefling, could be an orc, could also be dragonborn. Just a big, powerful dude who turned into a monk, very much similar to the character you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He was a former soldier, and his big, regrettable past mistake is he was so happy... and so excited to, like, go out and kill things that he didn't realize he was part of a party that killed an innocent village and slaughtered him.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until after his, like, it was over where grief overtook him.
Mm-hmm.
And through this event, he is vowed to be a monk and serve himself to clear the thoughts in his head and find inner peace.
Okay. No, that one's not as bad because they actually do have soldier as a background.
Yes.
And a lot of soldiers, like most soldiers would be like a level one character.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of makes sense because actually if you think about it, a level one character is already going to be superior, far superior to a commoner.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a commoner is just a basic person that has no proficiencies. They don't know how to fight. So it would already make sense that he could be a level one character because a level one fighter is like a guy that's been training all of his life or been training most of his life to be a soldier, to be a fighter. So that actually makes more sense.
Okay.
Because that one's like with the way that like, the ranking, or I don't even know how to describe it, the way that how they describe characters, because like a level 20 is like a god,
yeah,
like god tier, but a one is like a couple steps up above, you know, a farmer,
experienced but not like overly powerful.
No,
okay, so that makes sense. Yeah, like Zaxxas,
yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I would like that one. That'd be interesting. I'd say she's probably a 4+.
Nice.
That's He'd be cool. a lot of fun to put things in the game from his past.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we're, you know, in a quest, but then we run into the mercenary company or whatever it was that he worked for prior.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this internal conflict where we have to work with to meet this goal, but knowing that Sergeant so-and-so is a giant prick and he made me kill all this stuff, and that would make for some good
internal conflict. Or just like that, I also put in here too, like, is proficient in some weapons but outright refuses to use any weapons because of like the last time he did slaughter, and just the name Village Slayer I think would be an interesting, like, if anyone had any Nora, like, if people knew who he was.
Yeah. Yeah, automatically have a harder time negotiating with people or interacting with people just because they know.
Intimidation goes up, though.
Yeah.
All right, so 4+ for that one. All right. Also put in here, may later become a warlock multi-class.
Okay.
If the voices or like the thoughts is still there.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last one.
Yeah.
Getyo Turnkiss.
Getyo Turnkiss.
Bard.
Okay.
Gnome.
Yeah.
Was born a slave. Watched her parents who fought for freedom get slain in front of her.
Yeah.
Her grandpa taught her elegance and music. It's basically taught her the way to get out of situations. Very charismatic character.
Okay.
When she was freed, she saw that the surface. When she saw the surface world for the first time, she saw a bunch of happy people who were very much aware of what was happening of the situation and didn't do nothing, which made her turn angry at the world.
Okay.
She despises most people in happiness, but often masks through it. To essentially, like, she's not a fighter. She has to convince people on her side, but she will inflict and motivate others to do cruel things. But this is not her drive.
Mm-hmm.
She is mostly a survivalist, but if in position to influence the situation and it doesn't outright affect her, she will essentially talk people to doing evil things. She's a character who very much wants to see the violence of other people happen, but also is easily influenced by her party members. Basically, if she has a bad idea and somebody talks her out of it, she'll be out of it.
Got it.
Also will be played mailed if I were to ever play this character.
Okay. Seems the most edgelordy out of all of your characters so far. That is just like to the T edgelord background.
Yep. Gotta throw in one.
You gotta throw in one edgelord in there.
It's not all of them are edgelord.
No, no.
I feel like that's very much like what new players do.
Yeah, very tragic and disturbed backgrounds and stuff like that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with an edgelord character as long as you play them right.
Yeah.
And I feel like for a DM and for a newer character, that makes it hard because a lot of new players can't get past their edgelordness. And they're just like, no, I wouldn't do that. I would stand there and skulk in the shadows and play the wrist violin or whatever. So, I mean, workability and stuff like that. You should really watch, or you should really listen to a YouTube channel called Crit Crab.
Okay.
And it's literally, he goes on Reddit and he, there's a whole like RPG horror stories subreddit where people will tell stories about their horrible D&D experiences. Yeah. And you might get what I'm talking about a little bit more, but yeah, I mean, I like the idea. I mean, it's not, it's a little more in depth of an edgelord, but it's still an edgelord. So I'm going to give that one like a 3.
Okay.
It would be hard to work with for a new player. And I feel like that character would cause a lot of conflict amongst the rest of the party.
I think so. That was like the hard part too. So this is the first, no, the second character I created. And this one was like, I want an evil character. An evil bard would be fun. So I think it'd be a fun character to play. Like, you know, singing and dancing, like, yeah, slaughter all the children. Dun, 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 cut their heads off, you know, like.
I mean, I do like the fact that it's not a, just a trope of the horny bard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that. Because most people, if they're doing an edgelordy character, it's usually, like, either a warlock or a rogue.
Because
it's, like, edgy. You know, I, like, I have a pact with a demon. So, yeah. Or rogue, you know, like I'm a murderer, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like that fact that you're going away from the horny bard trope, which is kind of funny because I think Turlo's more of a horny bard than he is a rogue.
He is more of a horny bard than or bard than he is a rogue. But yeah. I also like that about Turlo is that he's not this edgy person, but like he is edgy in his own way.
Right. So, like I said, again, not to dog on that one, like saying that it would be a bad idea. I feel like that would be a like 2 or 3 years from now Jake type of character.
I think so. This is like, I tried playing this character on Baldur's Gate. This is the one I tried. And it was hard.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how do I not be a dick to everybody, but also like charismatically like put them as part of like my survival group? I'm like, that's a hard balance.
Yeah. And the other thing that you would, I think, would run into is you would end up probably pissing people off in real life.
Yeah.
Is what the problem with edgelords are. Edgelord characters, they're a very, it's a very fine line that you have to draw,
mm-hmm.
you know, and play very smartly, which is really weird that you think that, but like, you got to remember at the end of the day that you're still playing with other people.
Yeah.
And even though you're role playing a character, like, people take that shit to heart. Like, there's like, you start talking about like the wrong stuff that you didn't know, like maybe someone has like past trauma or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's why kind of too, you want to do a little bit of a like, okay, this is exactly the kind of campaign that we're going to be running. We're going to be talking about murder yeah. and you know, this and that and the other thing, and like, this is what you should expect. And usually that's like a session zero type of thing yeah. where you talk about that before. But even if like, even with that, there could be like something like, oh, it doesn't seem like a big thing to me, but like this edgy character talks about, you know, their parents dying, and maybe you could be playing with some rando around the world that their parents actually died or something like yeah. that. So like I said, it's a fine line.
Yeah. I will, to your point too, cause like even in our session zero, with Turlo, me playing Turlo, and then Donald's character Nike, very much just a fucking asshole to start
off. Yeah.
And there was like a point where I like looked at Donald, like, "Are we good, man?"
Yeah,
like,
no.
And like I actually like brought it up like to his attention afterwards. I'm like, "I'm just double checking. We good?" Like, it's like, "Oh no, my character's just very like in much of like very lawful, and your character is the opposite of that. So my character would be a dick to your character." I'm like, Okay, cool. Like, that's all I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I had to double check, so I'm like, I'm trying not to take this personally.
See, and that's what I mean. Like, even just that little interaction of, like,
yeah.
you know, the lawful good paladin and the stupid bard, you know, the annoying rogue. Like, yeah. even that, people are like, bro, you good? You good? Mm-hmm. But then, like, yeah, like, so imagine that, but making it more heavier content.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's why I put in there too, like, will, like, does succumb to peer pressure.
Sure.
Because, like, if you have that edgy of a character who's like, yes, murder the children. It's like, yeah, no, we don't feel good about murdering the children. And then that character ends up murdering. It's like, okay, now there's this huge conflict. And it's like this party turmoil. It's hard to move on from that. Whereas, like, yeah, okay, I won't do that. But, like, you know.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I highly recommend Crit Crab. Like, you should listen to some episodes about that.
Okay.
And like, yeah, there's long running jokes about like the, you know, the player tropes, and Edgelord is one of them.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of like Edgelord and stuff like that too. So I took a lot of like the culture and like when making this, I'm like, I want to make very friendly, DM friendly, but also party friendly players, and also like. That was like, Getyo was very much like the edgelordness, getting that out of the way.
I think out of all your characters, that would be the hardest one to play and for me to DM.
Yeah.
Like, I'd just be like, I get it, you're edgy. I get it. You hate children.
I will say, though, I feel like there is like an edgelord where if like it's all you do is just like, murder them, and that's it. Like, I feel like that would be kind of a fun joke, but after a while, it gets...
Yeah,
there has to be some type of growth.
I'm guilty of that too. I played like two or three sessions with a character. He ended up being more annoying than I thought he would be, because I actually modeled him off of Jaqen and Hagar from Game of Thrones, the faceless man. And so like he would always call people the man, the boy, the elf, or whatever. Yeah. And like, of course, you know, he worshipped the Raven Queen and like. Tragic backstory and all this sort of stuff, so yeah, I'm guilty of it too. And I don't think I played him incredibly right. I think he was abrasive.
Yeah, that was like the one thing I worried about, like Turlo too, is being like overly abrasive.
See, he wasn't like, I think stupid is a lot more acceptable in D&D and then edgy is like people. D&D is almost synonymous with doing stupid shit, so it's like the stupid, fun-loving party character. That's why the horny bard's so easy to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a trope.
All right. Okay. One last tip. I really want to get a campaign started with the group.
Okay.
Have you had any thoughts of what we're going to do next?
Honestly, no.
No?
Okay.
Would you homebrew it, or would you base off a campaign?
I'd homebrew it.
Homebrew it?
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's, like, on the fence. So, like, part of me, like, wants to just do, like, have someone, like, take, buy one, like, the sheets and just run it.
Mm-hmm.
Just get that itch off of it.
I mean, I like the concept that we started with. I liked the very Norse-themed thing.
Love it, yeah.
I've always been, like, almost every one of my characters I've ever made in any game or any D&D game has always been very Norse-themed.
Nice.
So, I don't know why, but Vikings were just cool to me, so.
Any, I don't want you to spoil anything.
Mm.
And obviously, you said you don't have much prep.
No.
Any idea where you would take it? Because we did Wendigo.
Mm-hmm. I mean, easiest would be just that, like, we would go back to Raven Rock.
Yep.
And then shenanigans would ensue from there. Maybe we jump straight into raiding, and the raiding brings us to something. I feel like this party almost might be a little more... But this party might be more... This world might be more conducive for a evil campaign. Because, I mean, like, raiding and killing people and taking slaves isn't exactly nice stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard to make Vikings. But then again, it also could be a... option for some change and some growth, because Bulvi is now the High King.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he doesn't have the same qualms, or he doesn't have the same things that his father had.
Okay.
Maybe he sees the flaws in raiding and pillaging, and maybe he instead thinks that, hey, we just made a lot of money helping people. Maybe mercenary work is a lot.
That was like the thought I was getting when you said that Bulvi's High King. Like, ooh, mercenary. Like, that fits.
So, because, I mean, and like, historically, too, the Danes did do a lot of mercenary work.
Yeah.
They fought each other. It's whoever, whoever paid them the most money, they'd fight for. So.
Yeah. All right, mercenary work for the next campaign. Whenever we get that started, maybe we'll get our other two characters back.
Yeah, I don't know if we will, though.
I mean, I feel like in a way we'd have to write it where they come and go as they please.
They could, yeah.
Go that route. I don't know. I mean, the sorcery, at least there is some teleportation in Rogue. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Tom, thank you.
You're welcome.
Again. All right, everyone, this is it. This is our D&D creation podcast episode, as well as our follow-up preview with Tom, nerdier than you are, Chatfield. Thank you, Dom. Thank you, DMT.
You're welcome. All right,
we're out.